The scripture reading today is from Romans 5, verses 12 through 19. Therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death came through sin, and so death spread to all because all have sinned, sin was indeed in the world before the law. But sin is not reckoned when there is no law. Yet death exercised dominion from Adam to Moses, even over those whose sins were not like the transgression of Adam, who is a type of the one who was to come. But the free gift is not like the trespass. For if the many died through one man's trespass, much more surely have the grace of God and the free gift in the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, abounded for many. And the free gift is not like the effect of the one man's sin. For the judgment following one trespass brought condemnation, but the free gift following many trespasses brings justification. If, because of the one man's trespass, death exercised dominion through that one, much more surely will those who receive the abundance of grace and the free gift of righteousness exercise dominion in life through the one man, Jesus Christ. Therefore, just as one man's trespass led to the condemnation for all, so one man's act of righteousness leads to justification and life for all. For just as by the one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, so by the one man's obedience the many will be made righteous.
I don't know. Perhaps it's because I'm getting more and more cynical in my old age. But it just seems like we live in a time, an era, when people are awfully quick to blame other people. Feels like we've moved from an era of who you're going to call to who you're going to blame. And I suppose it's been that way for some time. Which is why this story from my childhood, from my youth, stands out so strongly in my memory. Now, it's a good chance I've mentioned this story before, but it's a hallmark in my home church experience back from the early 1970s. You see, when I was in high school, I helped organize among the youth an annual event to raise money for CROP. What we would do is over the Thanksgiving weekend, we would, as a youth group, stay at the church, not eat any food, and by the hour, take pledges for how long we'd go without eating to raise money for CROP. It became quite a successful event. And it was one of those things that the church seemed to appreciate about what we had done. Except for, well, this one year. You see, on Sunday after church, we were told that we needed to meet with some of the elders of the church, because they weren't happy with the condition in which we had left one bathroom. We were blamed for a bathroom being left in a less than clean condition. Now, I didn't always get along well with the elders of the church at that time. It perhaps something to do with challenging the process. However, one thing I did know is that it made sense to make sure that we cleaned up well after ourselves so this kind of a charge couldn't be leveled against us. And so, but here we were. There was a bathroom that was messy, that we as a youth group knew we weren't responsible for, and yet we were being blamed for it. The turning point in this story was when one of the other elders came to our defense and said that he didn't think that we were responsible for that and we should be praised for what we had done and not blamed for this thing that was probably left by somebody else. Man, I was amazed that someone, an elder, would come to the defense of our youth group in that way. It stood out. And so whenever I'm hearing people being blamed for things, I kind of remember that story. Are they being blamed fairly or rightly? And so in our reading today, Paul, in his way of trying to summarize some fairly complicated theological ideas, puts the blame on Adam. Adam is responsible for the fall, and Adam is responsible for sin coming into the world. Now, the important part of Paul's message is what comes next, because it's Jesus who is responsible for providing hope and salvation. But we can be hung up a little bit too much on the blaming Adam piece. Now, whenever someone does this, they summarize a illustration or a story or a piece of history, it's always good to go back to the original source. And if we go back to Genesis and read about the fall, when Adam and Eve were in the garden with God and they do sin, and they are removed from that place to have to live in other ways, we will find that there's plenty of blame to go around. Oh, there's a serpent who whispers into their ears, you know, things can be better. There's more than what you know. And there's Eve who kind of let those thoughts in her mind, and she thought about it, and she did some things, and Adam let those thoughts get into his mind, and he wondered, and he did some things, and you know, there's blame here all the way to go around. There'd be some, and you're not hearing this from me, but there'd be some people who would even blame God. Because, see, God created people to be creative. And by being creative, being able to name things or to build things or to imagine things, it allows your mind to go to places that, well, maybe in this case it shouldn't have gone. Now, the summary that I would make of this story is that there are Adam and Eve in paradise. They have all they could possibly want and need. And then the thought enters their mind, but maybe there's more. And that's not just being creative. That's the piece of our behavior that gets us in trouble because it's motivated by greed. We'd like this a little bit more. And the lie that greed tells us is that we can have all that we already have and add something else and still keep everything else the way it was. And it never, ever works that way. When you add things to what you have, everything else changes. And that's the experience that Adam and Eve had in that circumstance. And if you're having trouble, you know, kind of wondering how they got into that circumstance, because they really had all they could possibly want. They had a great experience. Well, imagine it like this. You know, this might be tempting to some of you, I don't know. But first of all, you have to imagine that you have a generous pastor. And a generous pastor who's wealthy. So let your imaginations go there. And this generous pastor says, I have a few things I need to talk to you about related to the church. And I'm going to take you out to your favorite steakhouse, and you can order anything you want on the menu. And you don't get this chance very often. And so you order the $65 steak. And that comes with a baked potato and a little bit of salad and a drink. Now, you're pretty happy with that. You're pretty happy that you got singled out by the pastor for the special meeting, and you got to have a really nice meal. You're happy with that until you find out a couple weeks later that the pastor took someone else to the same place, and they had the $92 steak dinner, which comes with dessert. Now you're kind of wondering how you didn't see. See, you were totally satisfied with what you had before. But now that you find out that someone else got a little bit better, that thought creeps in, well, I wasn't fair. That's kind of what happened to Adam and Eve. Now, I've never bought either kind of steak dinner myself. I don't know what comes with a $65 or a $92 steak dinner. I just don't know because I'm not ever inclined to pay that much money for a meal. I know that you can't. I go to places where you could. But I'm not inclined to do that. Just maybe my cynical side kicking in, but I'm kind of guessing that the $65 steak dinner is probably not different than the $30 steak dinner. It just costs more. And if you don't think that's possible, there's some folks at the Starbucks company who can tell you about their marketing plan for what to do with a 75-cent cup of coffee. Anyway. So there we are, you know, we're wondering if it's fair, if it's right. Well, all of that doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter because, you know, we don't always tell history quite the right way. So often when we look at history, and this is kind of what Paul does with summarizing Adam's fall, is they shorten it a little bit. They don't give the full context. So, you know, we've just passed through a few years with a lot of focus on World War I because it's been the 100th anniversary. And the myth about World War I is that the whole war started with a single bullet when the Archduke was assassinated. That was a tipping point. But there was a lot of things that went on before that that set the stage for that. And history's always that way. There are things that happen prior to the key moment that that are responsible. It'd be kind of like if you took a bunch of wood that's been cured for several years, it's nice and dry, you made a big pile of this wood, and then you put some kindling down there and some newspaper, and then you put a little gasoline on it. Now you could say you started it with one match, but there was preparation that made that match so effective. And that's what we shouldn't lose track of in this story, where Adam gets blamed for the fall and all of our failures as well. However, that part of the story is not that important. Because the real thing that Paul's saying to us is no matter how we got into this state, no matter how much trouble or difficulties comes upon us in our lives, Jesus is the one who makes things right. Jesus' behavior, his attitude, his work on the cross is what makes the world a better place. It's what changes things from difficult and bad and death into hopeful and better and new life. And that's the trend, and that's all Paul's trying to say here, is no matter how evil came into the world, it's been changed forever. The world's been forever changed by the life and the work of Jesus. And that's really his focus. And that's what maybe this scripture will be so challenging to us. Because we tend to be focused more on the bad news rather than on the good news. And that might be what we have to work at during the next few weeks if we're going to fully appreciate Easter Sunday. Because, you know, just kind of imagine. Imagine if I were to tell you a story, and this happened not too long ago near my house, but if I were to tell you a story about a person driving a truck too fast on the road at 2 a.m, and they hit a house, you might want to know more details. That might get your attention, especially when they hit the house, they knocked part of the house off. You might want to know some more details about what happened and what caused that and what it sounded like. And you might be interested to know, or you might guess, that the driver had been drinking. And that the house, was really too close to the road anyway. We can learn all these stories about, you know, what actually happened. But what's really important to know is that nobody got hurt. And that even the driver wasn't hurt in this experience. And that maybe this experience is going to be the tipping point for this person now to get the kind of help they need so they don't spend any more time ever driving down the highway at 2 a.m. drunk. And maybe, you know, it's probably in the long run good that this house is no longer quite so close to the road so that someone else doesn't come along and hit it and get killed. There's a real positive angle to the story, but we can focus so often on the bad news aspect of it that we don't get to the point that Jesus is involved making things better and providing a healing influence. You don't have to go too far to find out today about all the world's worry about the coronavirus, and it's worthy being worried about. It's part of the story about how to keep people safe, and we don't know fully how the whole story is going to unfold. But we should never lose sight of, as this is happening all around the world, the Spirit of Jesus is inspiring people to help and respond. And there are people who are willing to be healthcare providers at their own risk because people need their help. And there are people working on vaccines and all kinds of things. No matter how dark and difficult and scary the world may feel, Jesus is always there, making things better, striving to provide help and healing and wholeness. And that's what Paul is trying to say in this whole passage about how one person caused bad, but Jesus made it all better. And that's the focus, is on Jesus in this story. Now let me give you a chance to practice that yourself. I'm going to provide some scenarios for you. And when I go like this, that's your sign to fill in the blank. Keep it to yourself, however. But you can fill in the blank with anything you desire. It may be the first thing you come to your mind, or you might want to use some of your creative influences. But, so here we go. So after church service today, you're going to go out to your car and fill in the blank. And then you're going to go home, and when you get there, you're going to discover, fill in the blank. And then you get a call, and it's from an important person in your life, and they tell you, fill in the blank. As a result of that call, you go to the hospital. And when you get there, you discover, fill in the blank. Now you see, a story like that can go all kinds of different directions. And there could be positive stories. And there could be, you know, there are good reasons to go to the hospital, by the way. There could be. Not always, but there could be. Now I'm not going to ask you what you filled in the blank with. But I am going to ask you to think, that whatever you put in those blanks, whatever it was, did you remember that Jesus could make things better or right or sustain what's already good? That's really what's important in this story. Now, what happens to us? Jesus is there with us. And Jesus' role in the world is to provide hope and healing and salvation. So I'm going to give you one more chance to play this little game. Ready? Today's sermon was blankety, blank, blank. Remember, Jesus heard what you just thought.